So this footnote kind of reflects the compromise between, you know, the philosophy that not even FISA courts should be able to override people's personal data rights and the reality that that happens and nobody is willing to stop US-EU commerce over it. So what you have to do effectively is conduct a transfer impact assessment. And this gives you some guidance on what to consider in doing that transfer impact assessment. And I think the most significant thing is that you are allowed to consider your own practical experience. So, you know, the very large platform companies or ISPs, telephone companies, they will have gotten a lot of government disclosure requests. On the other hand, many of us will have never received one. And so you are allowed to take that fact into consideration when you make this warranty and when you do your analysis and say, look, we've never received this kind of request, so we have no reason to think that we will begin receiving it in the future. Or if you have received it, what kind of process do you have in order to support compliance with the requirements of the SECs? And then there are some kind of implementation steps, you know, that you've basically tried hard on the data transfer impact assessment. One theme that runs throughout the SECs that maybe people aren't as used to in the US outside of certain heavily regulated sectors is that all of these assessments are going to be available to the local data protection authority who has jurisdiction on request. And then you have a notice obligation if it becomes impossible to comply with this or, you know, the legal framework changes. And then if that notice obligation is invoked, you have a notice obligation for the requests and for changes in the legal environment. So there's a process. If you receive a request, you have to notify the data exporter. And you have to, if you're prohibited from doing that, you have to seek a waiver of that prohibition, and you have to keep the data exporter updated. And then also, if the legal environment changes, then you will need to update the exporter. And if it changes to the point that they can no longer comply, the importer can no longer comply, then the exporter is required to suspend their transfers. So that was a lot, but basic takeaway is that if you're in the US and you're processing EU data, you probably need to do some kind of transfer impact assessment in the next few months. I'm starting to see more guidance from law firms about how to do that. I've got a link in there that has one post with a little bit of detail. Plenty of firms will help you with it, but I'm hoping that we'll start to see more publicly available material so that lawyers can do this on their own without having to go to outside counsel if they have some familiarity with the privacy regulation space overall. Okay, so I could easily monopolize our entire time on the SECs, but I don't want to do that. So let me try and move a little more quickly here just through some other practical steps. Again, I imagine a lot of people will be getting requests from clients or their clients' customers to fill these things in and sign them, probably for the first time in some cases. So I just wanted to go through a couple practical tips. The good thing about the SECs is that they are pretty standardized. So really the only things that need to be completed are these annexes, where you fill in the specific details of the relationship. So Annex 1 is about what is the actual processing. So you would fill in the categories of data subjects whose personal data is transferred. That will just be a description of, you know, employees, customers, et cetera. Categories of personal data, it's useful to look at the GDPR categories for that in some cases, and special categories of personal data, such as sensitive data, need to be called out specifically. Otherwise, this can just be a description of, you know, email addresses, names, etc. Frequency of the transfer, most times that's probably going to be pretty continuous. Nature of the processing, you know, this is probably worth pulling from your privacy policy to answer that. Same thing with purposes of the transfer. The period for which personal data will be retained, again, you know, probably useful to pull from privacy policy. And then for transfers to sub-processors, ideally you would have a subprocessor list in your privacy policy that you could reference there. Annex 2 is a description of the technical and organizational safeguards. So basically, what are your security controls? It's a little bit hard to see here, but it's nice to look at just because it's kind of a helpful categorical list of what sort of security controls should you have in place. And then finally, Annex 3 is a list of the subprocessors and their contact detail. Again, I would expect you're going to get clients or your clients' customers asking for a list of your subprocessors if you haven't before, if you have multinational clients or ones that process EU data. There are also some places where you have different options on the clauses. I'm going to just go ahead and go through that. Finally, on implementation tips, as I said, you know, it's worth taking a little bit more time to write up your analysis in a way that you'd be happy for somebody else to read, because you have to make it available to the exporter and you have to make it available to the data protection authority. The processor if you're a subprocessor, the processor may ask for a copy of all of your subprocessor agreements, which is, you know, why people are actually having to do this now. The processor needs to notify the controller of any data subject request and not respond without authorization from a controller. That's not new, but it is something that is maybe a little bit counterintuitive for US companies.